You're listening to Executive Leaders Radio, broadcast from the Fairfax County Chamber of Commerce. This is your host, Herb Cohen, with my co-hosts, Dana Theus, Empower Consulting, and Colin Callahan, Callahan & Associates. We have a great lineup of guests for you in our show today, including Song Yi, CFO of Standard Solar, Jim Gibbons, CEO of Goodwill Industries International, Denda Young, Managing Partner, McLean Capital, and Waylon Crush, co-founder and CEO of Lunar Line. I'd like to introduce to you first Song Yi, CFO of Standard Solar. Song, what is Standard Solar? What do you guys do?
Standard Solar is a full-service energy solution company, starting from commercial all the way to residential. We service what I call full service. Mm-hmm. Is solar is one of our product line, mm-hmm. as name of the company. Mm-hmm. We also do energy efficiency, mm-hmm. energy backup.
Why'd they want you as the CFO of this organization?
I think it's because my background in alternative energy. I've been in alternative energy now for close to 14 years.
Were you a CFO previously?
Yes, I was a CFO of a company called Magellan Resources.
And what did you have some sort of a specialty as the CFO in the world of energy?
Yes, I was tax credit structure. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, for renewables, you need tax credit or subsidy from the government in mm-hmm. order for it to operate. Mm-hmm. And I was specializing in structuring those kind of deals.
Interesting. Where were you from originally? Where were you born?
I was born in Incheon, South Korea.
In South Korea?
Yes.
How young were you when you came to the United States?
I was 10 years old.
And why did you come to the United States?
Well, my father wanted to make sure. I have two younger sisters, and mm-hmm. he wanted to educate the three kids. So. Mm-hmm. He came to the land of opportunity to mm-hmm. Educate the three children.
So you're the oldest of three.
That's correct.
Uh-huh. And so you and your two sisters and mom and dad came to the United States. And how did that affect you? I mean, I guess South Korea is pretty much like the United States. Everybody speaks English. Everybody looks the same, right?
Well, you know, when we came here, I didn't even know how to say hi. So it was a big change for us. I was a classic, what they call, latchkey kid, which means I had a key.
How did that affect you coming here? What did that do to you? What did that teach you, now that you look back on it?
To adjust, deal with any circumstance.
Did that have a positive effect when you're CFOing?
Absolutely.
What do you mean?
It catered to how I manage people.
What do you mean?
My philosophy is lead by example, which mm-hmm. means I would never tell my staff to do something that I myself mm-hmm. would not
do. So you learned how to be flexible at a young age coming from South Korea to the United States and having to adjust to this society. What did mom and dad do for a living when they got here?
Mom and dad had two jobs until they saved up enough money and ran a liquor store for 30 years.
Mom and dad opened up a liquor store after coming from South Korea?
Correct.
Uh-huh. And did you ever work in that liquor store?
I worked there every day.
How young were you when you started working in this liquor store?
16.
You were 16. And I guess you were the boss because, you know, you were the owner's son, right?
No, I wasn't the boss. Actually, probably my mom was the boss and my mm-hmm. dad and I and both of my sisters.
Did you get paid a competitive wage for doing this?
Yeah, if a competitive wage is zero, yes, I got paid.
So you were how'd you feel about doing this, working in the family business in a liquor store? What did that teach you? What was that all about?
It taught me to work together. My dad always said that one generation has to always sacrifice for the next generation, and he did that by coming over here and working close to 14 hours a day. So it's something that I learned, that you work hard, and it is what he called land of opportunity. If you work hard at it, you'll get what you need.
Is that aware of the current success you're enjoying?
I think so, because everything I do is just working hard, never take no for an answer.
Has dad been to your office? Have mom and dad been to your office?
Unfortunately, my mom has, my dad hasn't. He's mm-hmm. still living, but he has Alzheimer's, so mm-hmm. he just mm-hmm. doesn't know where he is.
And mom's been to the office.
Mom's been to the office. You know, she's very proud that I have a nice corner office with a mm-hmm. great view, and mm-hmm. I think she feels proud that she, mm-hmm. All of us, not just myself, but both of my siblings have succeeded.
Dad's aware of your success prior to the Alzheimer's.
Yes, mm-hmm. yes.
Dana?
So are you sacrificing anything for the next generation?
We are trying. What we're realizing with my kids are they are spoiled immensely. So we are trying to figure out how to not spoil our kids.
Mm-hmm. And so you came from Korea and you're the oldest of three. What was the effect of being the oldest, considering you have two younger sisters?
It's a lot of responsibility at an early age. When I was 10, basically I was cooking, doing laundry, vacuuming, just upkeep of the household, not because my, because both of my parents were working two jobs, so there was no one there to support us.
Does that have any parallel with how you're running the CFOing of this business?
Absolutely. I take care of my staff as much as they take care of me. The philosophy of people around you make who you are. I have great staff along with my controller and my staff that does everything, and I'm very fortunate to have that.
Yeah, I think I could see that. You're the kind of guy, talk about working with, I could see you're the kind of guy that's easy to work with and that you really, you know, put your shoulder in to make it work as well, to move the boulder as well.
Absolutely. I mean, you work as a team. Just because I'm leading that team doesn't mean I'm going to pull rank.
Yeah, you're not a dictator. No. I can see that, you know, taking care of your sisters and working, you know how to work with. You know, as opposed to being resentful that, you know, you're working in the family business. It was just part of what you needed to do. And in fact, you would actually appreciate what your dad was doing, sacrificing.
Absolutely. I mean, working together for a common goal, I think, is how the whole society should function. And it's amazing how much we would be better off as a society.
Mm-hmm. I'm not surprised to hear you say that. Colin?
What were some of the other things you learned around the liquor store? Where was it?
The liquor store is... it's. You know, you see, it was in the very rough neighborhood of D.C., and you see different philosophy of people. For example, I had one person who was a drug dealer, and I used to tell him, you know, hey, you're going to die in a few months just because you're a drug dealer. And I remember him saying, I'd rather live like a king for 3 months than work at a McDonald's like my dad does. So that even I couldn't even imagine thinking like that. So it is, it's that shaped me a lot, that how hard you have to work for and how fortunate I am. Even though I worked a lot of hours and still went to school and all that, there's so many people who are worse off than you were.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, it's interesting you say that. I mean, you're the kid that came from Korea with no money and was working in a liquor store, and you think you had it good off.
Absolutely. I mean, by working at the store, you definitely saw a lot more people who are less fortunate than you were and give you that compassion and to help others. And
it sounds to me like you're awfully appreciative and grateful. Dana, Colin, what other questions do you have for our guests?
So how did you bring that forward? How does it show up in your management now?
In management, it's coming together as a team. I mean, you lead by example, as I stated before, but my team is everything to me. I mean, my senior management team, we work together as a team. We work with a common goal and push forward. And I think, you know, that's what I was taught to do, and that's what I continue to do.
Mm-hmm. You're married?
Yes.
How many years?
17 years.
Any children?
3 children.
Mm-hmm. What's the similarity between being a CFO and being a dad?
I try to show no favoritism for any of my 3 children. My children may disagree, but I try to treat them fairly. I have 2 lovely daughters and 1 son. Mm-hmm. So it's...
Which is more difficult, being the CFO of Standard Solar or being a dad?
Being a dad.
Why?
Because there's, you know, my wife is a saint. I mean, she works hard. She quit her job, actually, and set up a not-for-profit called Touching Heart. And she runs the house, plus that not-for-profit that helps the orphans. And she's just amazing. And I'm just support staff on at home. So
who does the books for the nonprofit?
Actually, I do.
Yeah, I'm not surprised. I figured, you know, you knew QuickBooks pretty well. Mm-hmm. Have you been back to Korea since leaving?
I have. I've been back when my grandfather was living. I used to go back every 3 or 4 years. Unfortunately, he passed away, so I don't go back as well.
Did your grandfather ever visit the United States?
He did once, and he was very appreciative. His comment was, it's amazing how United States has such an open air because all the trees are so straight. So I don't know if that had anything to do with it, but he was just amazed about how great this country is.
Do you think he'd be surprised with the success you're enjoying?
I don't think so. My dad, when he was in Korea, was in the military, and he went off to, like, Vietnam War. So my grandfather and I went fishing and grew up together. So he really taught me a lot there, too. So I don't think he would be
surprised. What did he teach you that you apply as CFO?
That, you know, treat people equally, the golden rule of, you know, do unto others as they want you want them to do unto
you. Wait, this is the United States. That's Korea. It's not the same stuff, is it?
I think it's the same thing. I think United States has forgotten those kind of common, simple goals that if we begin to strive, you know, valued, more values and all the other things that, you know, we should be living off of, that we'd be a much better country than we are now.
Interesting. What's the website address for Standard Solar?
It's www.standardsolar.com.
www.standardsolar.com. We've been speaking with Song Yi, CFO of Standard Solar, here on Executive Leaders Radio. This is your host, Herb Cohen, with my co-host, Dan Athias, Empower Consulting, and Colin Callahan, Callahan & Associates. Don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com, to learn more about our executive leaders. We'll be back in a moment, right after this business spotlight.
This is Dan Athias with Empower Consulting, and this is your business spotlight. I'm joined today by...
My name is Lindsay Kinn.
And what company are you with?
I'm actually with an organization called Luke's Wings. It's a 501c3 nonprofit. We provide airline tickets, complimentary emergency or rotational airline tickets for injured service members and their families in out of military hospitals across the country.
And what's your role?
I am the executive director of business development. We're actually a small team of just three people, so I oversee all the fundraising.
What makes the organization most special?
Most special to me is the fact that we have such a direct impact on our military families. There's a lot of organizations that are doing wonderful work, but they're also doing a lot of different things. Luke's Wings is an organization that does one thing, which is provide airline tickets to keep our families together during very dark moments in their life. So by choosing to do one thing and doing it as to the best of our ability, we're able to have a direct impact on the most deserving families that we can think of.
And what do you personally enjoy most about your work?
It's very hard to put into words the difference I think we make, because there's nothing more important than having your family with you. It's hard to know how important that is when it's something you don't think about. But by providing these tickets, we're keeping families together. We're keeping children with their parents, and we're keeping husbands and wives together. And I love that we have the opportunity to do that.
That's wonderful. What brought you to the company?
I was a volunteer for 2 years. We got enough funding in 2011 to add someone to the staff full-time. I took on that responsibility, and in the last year, we raised about $1.3 million and been able to provide over 1,000 airline tickets.
Wonderful. How would someone contact you if they wanted to find the organization?
I would love to hear from anyone who'd like to get involved as a corporate sponsor, a volunteer, and we can be reached at www.lukeswings.org.
We're back. You're listening to Executive Leaders Radio. This is your host, Herb Cohen, with my co-host, Dana Theus, Power Consulting, and Colin Callahan, Callahan & Associates. I'd like to introduce to you Jim Gibbons. Jim is the CEO of Goodwill Industries International. Jim, what is Goodwill Industries International? What do you guys do?
Well, everybody's familiar with Goodwill, probably through our 2,800 stores around the country. Mm-hmm. But Goodwill's, each Goodwill of the 165 in the United States and Canada, or in 13 other countries, are a part of Goodwill Industries International. Mm-hmm. So we are a network of social enterprises, not-for-profits, whose mission is to really find that sweet spot between caring and enterprise, to create opportunities for people with barriers to employment to engage in the workforce and to go to work and to have a career.
Wait. Why does this job turn you on so much? Why do you start turning you on? By, you know, you're the CEO of Goodwill Industries International. You're the international head of this thing. It must be a ton of responsibility. Why are you doing this? Why is this personally appealing to you?
Well, for me, I joined Goodwill about 5 years ago. Prior to that, I was with a national organization called National Industries for the Blind. And prior to that, I was the president of a subsidiary of AT&T. And when I moved into this space with NIB... Yeah,
there's something deeper going on here. Where'd you grow up?
I grew up in Indianapolis, Indiana.
Indianapolis, Indiana. Anything interesting about your childhood that may have affected the reason that you wanted to get involved with Goodwill International?
Well, I grew up in Indianapolis. I'm the youngest of seven kids. I happen to be blind. I have an older sister who's blind as well.
Were you blind from birth?
No, I started losing my sight in third grade and was totally blind when I was about a sophomore in college.
How did that affect you?
Well, in a real practical sense, growing up, I was pretty engaged, and it didn't slow me down too much. But when I was graduating from college, you know, I had to fight the good fight to get a good job. 7 out of 10 blind people aren't working in this country, and I've been fortunate to be employed.
But that didn't have any effect on you, did it?
Well, it had a pretty big effect.
What do you mean?
I interviewed with 50 companies when I was graduating from Purdue and got 50 rejection letters.
Wait, you graduated from Purdue and you applied to 50 companies. If you were slated, you would have probably gotten the job, wouldn't you?
Well, my classmates were all getting a lot of job offers.
And you didn't.
But that had a pretty important impact on me. So when I went to work from AT&T to National Industries of the Blind, I really, you know, that was a real transition. To really focus on employment opportunities for people who are blind. And then from there to Goodwill really allowed me to work with an extraordinary brand and work on a broad range of issues with a lot of populations of people who have barriers to employment.
So how many folks are in this organization in Goodwill Internet? How many employees are there?
About 110,000.
110,000. You're blind and overseeing 110,000 people.
Well, I certainly have a leadership and a service responsibility to
All right,
them.
Wait a minute. I got to find out some more stuff here. How many brothers and sisters do you have?
I have 2 brothers and 4 sisters.
And you're the youngest of 7?
Correct.
What was the effect of you? What was the effect of being the youngest of 7 on you?
I think when you're the youngest, you learn how to get along. You get pretty scrappy. And, you know, you learn how to listen and how to create a consensus.
So you're a master at gaining commitment as opposed to demanding compliance.
Well, I don't know if I'm a master at it, but it's certainly a big part of the leadership role I would have with Goodwill.
Tell me a little bit about that.
Goodwill is 165 autonomous, not-for-profit organizations around the country. And I have a leadership responsibility and a service responsibility. So each Goodwill has to operate within standards to be a Goodwill, but at a real operating level, they're looking for leadership from me, but leadership that they have a willingness to follow.
Gotcha.
And so listening, understanding, and anticipating
It's like being the youngest of 7. I get it. I get the parallel with growing up the youngest of 7. Are you more like mom or dad?
Probably more like my dad.
What do you mean? Why?
You know, my dad was always a guy that knew how to listen. A lot of people counted on him, and he was kind of the mayor of the neighborhood, I'd say. People came to him at, you know, whether they were older, younger, or kids, and could always count on him for.
Didn't you tell me earlier in the green room that at his funeral there were 500 and some odd people or something like that?
Yeah, there were about 500 folks that came, and you know. He was a guy that I think had a lot of impact on a lot of people's lives.
So how did it affect you, and how did it affect your success in your career?
Well, I mean, I think he and my mom taught me the basics in life. Probably, if I really were to put it in words, with Goodwill. You know, my parents, as a young blind guy, they had high expectations of me, and then they surrounded me with the tools and the support and the love for me to find success. And if I parallel that with Goodwill, I think that's what we do. We work with millions of people every year, but we have high expectations and then try to surround
our mom and dad. Mom and dad still around nowadays?
My father has passed away, but my mom is still alive.
If mom was here, if dad was here nowadays, how do you think he'd feel about your success?
Well, I think he'd feel good about it.
Think he'd be surprised?
I think he, you know, he saw me in my first 15 years of my career, so he was always there with me. He saw me launch.
So you think he'd be proud of you?
I'd like to think so.
How about mom?
Oh, I'd like to think so.
Has mom ever been to the office?
She has not been to the office here, but they both have been to various offices of mine throughout their lives.
I mean, it must be pretty impressive walking into the office of a fellow who's overseeing Goodwill Industries International. Sounds like your parents did a great job with you. Are your siblings surprised?
Well, yeah. I mean, I've got great brothers and sisters. But my oldest brother always says I have 2 blind siblings. My sister and my brother, my sister, my brother went to Harvard Business School, and my sister's the smart one. So that's what my brothers and sisters think.
They teach you. Dana?
So a lot of kids would take 50 rejections and give up. Why didn't you?
Well, I think perseverance and stick-to-itiveness is the key to about everything. And, I had moments of wanting to give up. But ultimately, that stick-to-itiveness got me two job offers with AT&T and IBM. So it took the big companies to take a shot on the young blind engineer out of Purdue. Mm-hmm.
Colin, Dana, next question.
So what advice would you give to someone who's on the brink of giving up?
Don't. I think it really is important. You got to build the skills. You got to have the excitement and the passion for what you're trying to do. But you got to also endure. And I don't think there's anything that's worth having that doesn't take the work.
Colin?
So you're sitting at your desk at AT&T. What caused you to decide to go to the National Industries?
I had this great, great job at AT&T, and I got a call from the search firm, and they told me about this thing called NIB. And this was before I'd ever heard the word social enterprise, but when they described it, I said, wow, I like business, and this is a business model that actually has positive effect. And this NIB really worked on getting contracts that would put people who are blind to work. And so I thought, what the heck? Use the skills I've attained and try to have, an impact on the lives of people who are blind. And I did that for 10 years, and then I was able to kind of take the leap to serve a broader range of populations with goodwill.
Mm-hmm. You really think you've been able to affect people's lives?
I think that I am very fortunate in that my career has allowed me to in some small way touch a lot of lives and be a part of really trying to drive systems and systems change through pretty complex networks to do just that.
Mm-hmm. Well, I guess the good thing is, you're the CEO of Goodwill Industries International. You get to go in at 10 o'clock and leave at 3 or 4 and have cocktails for lunch, huh? And you don't got to work weekends either.
I got a pretty intense schedule. It's not exactly like that. Uh-huh. But
what time do you normally start thinking about Goodwill in the morning?
Well, I probably wake up thinking about... I like work. Work is something that's important to me. So, I would say I'm a... I try to strike the right balance and between family and work, but those are my primary interests, those two things.
Mm-hmm. Do you ever have to work on the weekends?
Probably half of them.
How about nights? You have to work at nights, dinners and stuff like that?
Work, and there's plenty of that, yeah.
But doesn't feel like work to you, huh?
I like it all. I like the problems. I like dealing with the tough issues, and I mostly my most inspirational days are when I'm visiting a Goodwill and I have a chance to meet with the local board of directors or the leadership team and then do a town hall meetings with the entire workforce and really, really engage with and get to know the people that we serve and, maybe in some small way have a great connection with them.
So you really enjoy getting out into the field and meeting the heads of the different Goodwills. And the boards.
And the people that we serve.
Mm-hmm. Huh. That's really interesting. Well, I guess, boy, you've got a diverse job. I guess on one hand it's fundraising, on one hand it's finding opportunities, it's ensuring that the team is together. There's a whole mess of pieces to this, isn't there?
I would say that, the day in the life is, I'd put it in the 99th percentile of interesting jobs and exciting jobs and things that are meaningful.
The website address of Goodwill Industries.
Goodwill.org.
Mm-hmm. We've been speaking with Jim Gibbons, CEO of Goodwill Industries International, here on Executive Leaders Radio, with my co-host Dana Theus, Empower Consulting, and Colin Callahan, Callahan & Associates. This is Herb Cohen. Don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com, to learn more about our executive leaders. We'll be back in a moment right after this business spotlight.
Schwartz with Vistage International, and this is your Business Spotlight. Joining us today is
Gordon Bernhardt.
Gordon, what is Bernhardt Wealth Management?
Bernhardt Wealth Management is a registered investment advisory firm. We're one of the top independent wealth management firms in the Washington, D.C. area.
What makes your company special?
I'd say three things. One is that we are a personal chief financial officer. We act in that capacity for our clients, so that means we help them address their investment issues. We also focus on the holistic approach, so that means we focus on wealth enhancement, wealth transfer, wealth protection, and charitable planning issues for our clients. Second area is that makes us special is that we are a registered investment advisor. We don't have a broker's license, and that simply means that we have a fiduciary duty to always act in our clients' best interest. Most of the industry have broker's licenses, and some of them have advisory licenses, and a broker is held to a suitability standard. We're held to the fiduciary standard.
So what that means to a customer would mean that you work in their interest, not for the interest of the stock that you're trying to sell.
That is correct. And the third area that makes us special is that we have a very academic approach to investing. Everything that we recommend to our clients is strictly based on academic research.
And what do you enjoy most about this work?
I love helping clients. You know, I'm passionate. I get satisfaction out of knowing that we touch people's lives. We can then, you know, our role is basically free up their time so they can focus on what's important to them. For some of our clients, that means their family and grandkids. For some, it's their business. And others, it's their charitable interests. We solidify their relationships in those areas.
Great. How can someone reach you?
We can be reached by phone at 703-356-4380 or on the web at bernhardtwealth.com.
Great. This is Peter Schwartz with Vistage, and we've been speaking with Gordon Bernhardt from Bernhardt Wealth Management, and this has been your Business Spotlight.
We're back. You're listening to Executive Leaders Radio. This is your host, Herb Cohn, with my co-host, Dana Theus, Empower Consulting, and Colin Callahan. Callahan and Associates. I'd like to introduce Dendy Young. Dendy is the managing partner of an organization known as McLean Capital. Dendy, what is McLean Capital? What do you guys do?
It's a private equity investment company. We invest in small companies and try and make them successful, because if we do make them successful, we make we get a return on our investment.
Now, when you're investing in these companies, is it just your money or is it other money as well?
It's both. I'm very serious that if I'm going to be involved in a business, I want to invest my own money, or my wife's and my money, should I say, so it's never just my money. Mm-hmm. And we take it very seriously, and we take the investment and the commitment very seriously. And when we get others involved, I want them to know that I'm...
That you're engaged, that you got skin in the game.
That's right.
Now, the companies that you're investing in, the benefit of McLean Capital is they get your dollars, correct?
That's right.
Do they get anything else?
Well, in many cases, they get me on the board. And so...
But what do you know about being on the board? Have you ever built anything before?
Well, I started my... I had an interesting experience when I got out of business school. I was faced with a difficult choice. This is in 1974, and you had a choice between taking a job with Boston Consulting Group, which was a well-known consulting firm, or a small company. And BCG wanted to pay more. And yet I knew in my gut that if I was going to learn to be a small businessman and understand how small businesses worked, that I wasn't going to go consult to General Motors through BCG, but that I was really going to go take. And so I took the lower paying job in a small company. And this was a company of about, at the time, 45, 50 people. They'd just gone through a great break-even year, had great growth and break-even bottom line. And I joined the company, and I was going to open up their West Coast office. That was my challenge. And 3 months into it, we discovered that what had been a rapid growth break-even year was, in fact, a rapid growth disastrous loss year, because the controller had forgotten to accrue some expenses.
Oh, my.
And
so you know what it's like to have skin in the game and also at the same time really build an operating business. Have you ever been involved with building a series of entrepreneurial successes?
Sure. I started my first company when in my early 30s. And
How many businesses have you been involved with? How many entrepreneurial businesses have you been involved with?
Well, I've taken, as CEO, as founder and CEO, I've taken two companies, one to $48 million in revenue, another one to over $200 million in revenue. And
wow, so if you invest in a company, the benefit that the entrepreneurial team gets is not just your dollars, but you've been there and done that.
Absolutely. And I think that there's huge value to a young team in having that.
Yeah, because you've already know what you've proven your success. You're not academic. You're the real deal. Where's that accent from? Where are you from originally?
I grew up in Rhodesia, now known as Zimbabwe.
You grew up in Rhodesia, now known as Zimbabwe. How young were you or how old were you when you came to the United States?
I was 18.
You were 18. And you came with the family?
Nope, came all alone.
You came all alone. Why?
Well, I'd been lucky enough to be the recipient of a all expenses paid scholarship under the generosity of Uncle Sam.
To where?
To university of my choice.
Which one was that?
And so I went to MIT.
Wait a minute. You went from Rhodesia to MIT.
Yes.
At the age of 18, alone.
Yes.
My gosh, what a world! It's a world of difference, isn't it? I mean, that was an easy adjustment.
it was quite strange. Yes.
Uh-huh.
Quite.
What did that teach you? Looking back on that, what did you learn from that experience coming from Rhodesia to MIT?
I was extraordinarily lucky in Rhodesia because I grew up in an environment where they had an educational system which was adjusted to the British system,
mm-hmm.
And so I really came to the States with what I'll call a British education. I'd done O levels and A levels and S levels and mm-hmm. things like that. And so I was extraordinarily lucky. And consequently, academically, coming to the States wasn't a major challenge, although socially and environmentally, it was quite an eye-opening experience.
So socially and environmentally, what did you learn from the experience that now has a positive effect in your business dealings?
I think that what I learned is that the American people are wonderful people, that they were so good to me that, you know, I think that mm-hmm. anything I can do to pay back to this country
mm-hmm.
what it has done for me is worth doing.
Are you involved in any other activities around town giving back to the community?
I'm highly actively involved in many not-for-profit organizations.
Why do you do that?
Well, because it's the right thing to do, and I'm at a stage in my life where I have enough control over my time that I can afford to do that.
Wait a minute, you're telling me you came from 18 from Rhodesia to MIT, which is a different world, and you've had entrepreneurial success. You're now investing your own dollars, private equity, in entrepreneurial businesses, and you're also finding time to give back to the community.
Of course.
But you could financially retire. Why don't you just go to Tahiti? Isn't the American dream to make enough money and just go retire?
Yes, that may be true. I'm not sure it is true. But the real, for me, to continue to be involved in working with people and in watching stuff happen and grow and dealing with the crises and so on. You
want to do that as opposed to go on vacation?
Absolutely. There's a wonderful quotation from Teddy Roosevelt, you know, from a speech in the Sorbonne back mm-hmm. in 1929, in which he says, "It's not the critic who counts. You know, it's the man who's in the arena who's covered with blood and sweat uh-huh. and dust."
I get it.
And to my mind, that's mm-hmm. that's the way I run my life.
So you really enjoy the challenge, it sounds like, whether it's the for-profit world of helping these businesses get started and succeed or the nonprofit world. Of being involved with, being engaged with people, helping solve problems and the challenges?
I think that's a good statement.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good summary.
So how many brothers and sisters do you have? Did you grow up with?
I have two older half-brothers and, mm-hmm. and two younger sisters and a younger brother.
You're more like mom or dad?
I think I'm a mixture.
What do you mean?
Well, I think intellectually I'm probably more like my father. In terms of pragmatism, I'm more like my mother.
So you're not the kind of guy that comes up with crazed, wild ideas that are non-grounded. You try to keep yourself grounded pragmatically?
I'm really basically very conservative.
In a business, are you more the CFO, more the CEO, more of the marketing guy, more of the operating guy?
You know, in the businesses that I've been involved with, especially from a startup stage, you've got to be all of those things. And it's not clear that I'm very good at any one of them. But when you put the package
wait,
together...
Wait, should you be admitting that on the air? This is going out of the... I don't think you should be telling everybody you're not the best at stuff.
I'm not.
Why would you want to admit that? Why do you say that?
Because it's true. I mean, you know, you've got to deal with reality. You've got to deal with the facts. And
don't you think you're the best at doing it? I guess not, because you've been successful. I mean, you're an authority. I mean, you know what you're talking about. You don't think you're the best at doing everything?
No. Nope.
Well, how do you manage to have these successful businesses then?
Hard work and, you know, trying to make as few mistakes as you can and learning from the ones you do make.
Are you comfortable bringing people around you that are better than you and
absolutely
trusting them?
That's the only way to succeed, is if you can hire and engage people who are better than you are.
Isn't that scary, though? I mean, you know, you got to trust them. You got to feel safe with them. Things can go wrong. You got to depend on them.
Well, you know, you do depend on them. They do go wrong, and sometimes they let you down. But it's not because they are bad people. It's because, you know, the world is a tough place.
Ah, I see now. Okay, I just learned something, Dana. Colin?
In the green room, you told us a story about when you were a junior in college, a light went off for you. There was a pivotal moment. Can you tell us about that?
Sure. It was, you know, when I came to the States, I was going to be a physicist. And because I thought physics was pretty neat, and in the middle of Africa, that was kind of unusual. And then I decided when I got here that I really wanted to be an engineer, and then a computer engineer. And then I realized that I really didn't want to work for some large organization. Mm-hmm. And so at that point in time, I think another factor was my maternal grandfather had been an entrepreneur and had started a business in Rhodesia. And I'd always admired the fact that he had a very nice car, and that we'd never, when we grew up, we never had those things. You mm-hmm. know, we couldn't afford a vacation every year. We couldn't. There's a lot of things we couldn't afford, mm-hmm. and so I wanted to emulate mm-hmm. perhaps my grandfather.
Are mom and dad aware of your success? Are they aware of what you've been able to accomplish?
Well, you know, I think every son is a wonderful success.
Are they still around? Are they still around nowadays?
My mother is, yes. Mm-hmm. My father passed away a few years ago.
Mm-hmm. If he was here now, how do you think he'd feel about your success?
You know, I think he'd say, "Well, I expected that."
Okay, expectations. I get it loud and clear. Mm-hmm. You married?
Yes.
You have any kids?
Yes, I have four kids.
Four kids. What's the similarity between being a dad and being an entrepreneur?
Actually, a lot of similarities, because, you know, there is no place to hide as a parent.
Or as an entrepreneur, huh?
Or as an entrepreneur. You know, you're smack dab in front of reality at any uh-huh. point in time. So it's interesting.
Uh-huh. That's interesting. Yeah. So at home, who wears the pants in the family?
Oh, clearly my wife. She's by far the more talented of the two of us.
I figured you'd say that. What's the website address of this McLean Capital?
Well, McLean, www.mcleancap.com.
Excellent. And we've been speaking with Den DeYoung, Managing Partner of McLean Capital, here on Executive Leaders Radio with my co-host Dana Theus, Single Tower Consulting, and Colin Callahan Associates. We'll be back in a moment right after this Business Spotlight.
This is your Business Spotlight, brought to you by Peter Schwartz, a Vistage Chair with Vistage International. And joining us today is...
Pat Chance.
Pat, who are you with?
I am with CompuData, where I am the Director of Business Development in the D.C. metropolitan area.
And what is CompuData?
CompuData is a technology company delivering end-to-end solutions. And by that, we deliver business management software, which really includes Sage and Epicor ERP. Along with that, we also provide hardware, technical support and planning, hosting, disaster recovery, and professional services to meet the needs of our customers.
Wow. What makes your business special?
What makes our company so special? We've been in business now for 41 years. Our president and CEO is Angela Nadeau, and she was honored most recently in Forbes magazine as the 100 most powerful women in business. Along with that, we've won many business awards, such as Accounting Technology, VAR 100, and the Business Journal.
Oh, and what do you enjoy most about your job?
I enjoy helping companies, and most importantly, people. Helping them find the right solution to run their businesses effectively.
And why do you think your customers appreciate you?
They appreciate us because we are the trusted advisor. They depend on CompuData to deliver the right solution to help run their businesses.
How can someone reach you?
At www.compudata.com, and please visit me on LinkedIn.
That's great. We've been speaking with Pat, who's with CompuData. This is Peter Schwartz, and this has been your Spotlight for the day. Have a great day.
We're back. You're listening to Executive Leaders Radio. This is your host, Herb Cohen, with my co-host, Dan Athias, Empower Consulting, and Colin Callahan. Callahan and Associates. I'd like to introduce Waylon Crush. Waylon is the co-founder and CEO of an organization known as Lunar Line. What is Lunar Line? What do you guys do?
We are a cybersecurity and privacy solutions company. And, you know, we actually have three what I consider complementary components. We do cybersecurity training. We do services, and we're in about 16 government agencies, and also we have select commercial clients. And we also build cybersecurity and privacy products.
Well, how large or how small is this business?
We're about 100 people.
100 people. And what kind of revenue are you guys doing?
Right around $10
million. And how did you get a job with this company?
I started the company.
You started the company. How old are you now?
I'm 35 right now.
How old were you when you started this business?
I was 27 years old.
Why'd you start a business as opposed to getting a normal job? What happened? What's going on here?
Well, I had a very interesting manager when I worked at one of the companies, which I won't mention. The manager, we didn't get along very well. And one day I decided, well, I'm just not going back into work. It was a Friday. And lucky for me, that weekend I was able to call someone up, one of my friends, and he said, why don't you come into this contract I'm running right now on Monday? And so I showed up for work on Monday.
I see. So you have guts. Where were you from originally?
I'm originally from South Dakota.
Where in South Dakota?
Box Elder, South Dakota.
What's the population of Box Elder, South Dakota?
I believe it was around 300 to 500 when I was there. It's grown a little bit since then.
How old were you when you finally left?
I was 18 years old.
So this is 300 to 500 people. This is a farm you grew up on.
It was more of a farmette, if you will. It was a trailer in the middle of the prairie.
So you didn't grow up in privileged circumstances?
I wouldn't say so. Not financially, but socially, I would say.
Tell me what you mean.
Well, you know, I have a very tight-knit family. They're all great.
How many brothers and sisters?
I have one brother.
Younger?
Yes, he's younger.
So you're the oldest of two. And what did mom and dad do for a living? What were they all about?
Growing up, actually my father was a Vietnam vet. He came back after the war. I was born in Gillette, Wyoming. At one time, he actually worked on the oil wells there. When the wells dried up, he moved to Rapid City, South Dakota. And we moved there from there to Box Elder. And my mother, she's always worked in the electronics industry, actually more in the manufacturing side of things.
So you decided, why did you decide to leave this environment of 300 to 500 people?
I always knew there was something more out there, and boy was I right.
And what was the bridge to this something else? What'd you do?
I actually enlisted in the U.S. Army.
Ah, so how did that influence your life?
Immensely, I will say. You know, it's the first time I ever rode in an airplane was when I joined the Army.
Oh, what else?
First time I went out of a state that was not connected to South Dakota.
And how did this influence your business career?
It opened my eyes to, you know, of course, other people, other countries. But I think that the thing that I got most from the military is it's a very structured environment, and it taught me a lot of leadership.
Wait. I understand that starting an entrepreneurial business, you got to do a million and one different things, and you got to, it's like it's all flexibility. It's all anticipating the market and changes. And so I'm trying to figure out how an organization as large as the Army could have taught you something to help you entrepreneur. Give me that again.
Well, you know, in the Army, it's really, I was in intel. So in the field I was in, and maybe I'm lucky, but I think they do this across the military. You know, they just throw you in a situation and you have to adapt. And I think that's something that it's the same thing I deal with every single day in my life.
It's part of entrepreneuring is learning how to adapt.
Correct.
Colin, Dana? There we go. I got the next question. So this entrepreneurial bug, you co-founded the business. Why did you co-found it? Why didn't you just do it yourself?
Well, you know, it's very important when you start a company, I think. And I know under the way I started out was simpler, if you will, than most might like. I'm a technologist. I am deeply into programming, into technologies, developing and creating technologies. And I always like to say I'm one of the engineers that you can talk to, and I actually can look up from my shoes.
Mm-hmm.
So I needed someone that also had operational capability within the company, that understood how to run a business, understood how to do payroll and different things like that, because I really didn't have any interest in doing that part of the company.
Mm-hmm. I see. So you wanted a compliment. You wanted someone to work with.
Absolutely.
I see. Dana?
What was happening in that moment when you realized you're not a technologist anymore?
That moment's never happened. I am still a technologist. I'm a very tactile leader, meaning that, you know, I get down into the weeds all the time. I'm on site with my customers. I want to understand, you know, it's very important to understand in cybersecurity, it is always changing. So for me to sit in an office and sit back and think that I can grow the company that way probably wouldn't be very good for my business.
So you have this willingness to bring people around you that are different than you and really trust them?
Absolutely.
Huh. Did the military help you develop that as well, or where'd you get that from?
I probably got it from growing up in my family. But I think that the military definitely enhanced that. You know, when you're in the military, you're always put into situations where you absolutely have to give the people around you the utmost trust. You have to know that they know their job and they're going to execute either independently as part of the team. So it's a good leadership skill to learn.
And how'd you get that from the family?
I was out in the middle of the prairie. It's pretty much the same way there, you know. Growing up in South Dakota, you always depend on your family. We all have hard times. You know, things happen where you absolutely need sometimes your brother to do certain things. You know, my mother actually had to work for the family when my father got sick. So she picked up two jobs and she ran with that.
Mm-hmm. So you learned about the interdependence.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Colin?
What was your biggest surprise once you jumped in and started the company? What were you most surprised by?
Payroll. That was a very difficult problem for me. I really loved building the systems. I really loved the technology. I love the people, you know. But understanding that I have to wait 90 days, 120, 160 days before I was actually paid, but I still had to pay my people every 2 weeks, that was a difficult thing when we started up.
So how'd you deal with that?
Well, the partner I brought on actually helped fund us a lot. It's a funny story. The first time I went up to him, I said, you know, Keith, can you give me $10,000? And he looked at me. He's like, yeah, sure, here, Waylon. The next time I came up to him about a week later, I said, can you give me $20,000? And he says, sure, Waylon. The next time I came up, I said, I need $50,000. And then finally Keith looked at me, and he's not rich, but he said, Waylon, I'm going to have to ask you, what are you doing with this money?
So he trusted you. He trusts
Absolutely.
You. And he was willing to write the checks that you didn't have the checks to write. So he really believed and wanted to work with you.
You know, he didn't even know what I was using the money for at the time. I asked for the money and he, without question, gave it to me.
Mm-hmm. Because he knew he could trust you.
Absolutely.
So he's your partner nowadays.
He is my partner.
Are you guys working together full-time or is he passive?
Oh, no. He's full-time, too.
And how old is he? Is he your same age or older, younger?
No, he's in his 50s.
Mm-hmm. So he made some money in a previous business and...
I don't know that he's made money in a previous business. He actually worked for some large non-for-profits, but I met him at AT&T.
Mm-hmm. And who approached whom about going into business?
So he left AT&T early. I actually was his boss at AT&T. Mm-hmm. And then when he left, then he went and started his own company. And he was running kind of a one-person company for a while. And then when I started my company, I got up to about 10 people in about 3 months. So obviously it was difficult to make payroll.
I see. And that's when you reapproached him.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So the kids you grew up with in South Dakota, in the elementary school you went to, they'd be surprised that you ended up this way?
Oh, absolutely.
Uh-huh. Tell me a little bit more about what their impression. If I knew you when you were 7, 8, 9, 10 years old, what would I have thought?
Well, you know, when I graduated high school, I was actually the class clown. So I was a mm-hmm. jokester. I was always playing the pranks on everyone. I would actually take the microphones over in the school sometimes and mm-hmm. say things and get uh-huh. kicked off. So, uh-huh. You know, I was definitely the jokester.
How young were you when you started making money?
Geez, you know, as young as I can remember, my first job in South Dakota was probably when I was about second grade. me and a friend, we worked in a campground, and we'd go around and deliver a wood to the bikers during the Sturgis Biker Rally.
Wow. Well, I guess you had an elastic price point there. You could charge basically whatever you wanted. So,
that's
right. Demand outstripped the supply.
It was cold, so, you know, there was it was cold at night.
Uh-huh. I got you. So you know about seasons and cycles as well. So you were pretty entrepreneurial as a kid, huh?
I would say so.
Mm-hmm. Did Mom and Dad spot that characteristic in you?
Oh, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. How about your brother? What would your brother, if we were talking to your brother now, would he be surprised you ended up like this?
He probably wouldn't.
Uh-huh. So he knew you pretty well. Did mm-hmm. he work with you when you were, did you get him engaged and employed when he was young too?
Interestingly enough, you know, he actually was originally in my company when we started up, but mm-hmm. we're brothers and we didn't necessarily always agree which way the company was going to go.
I understand. Is he still in the D.C. area?
No, he's actually in Bozeman, Montana.
Oh, I gotcha. Have you been back home where you grew up recently within the last couple years?
I go there at least once a year, if not twice.
And how does it make you feel going back home considering the success you're enjoying here in the D.C. market?
Oh, it feels great. You know, I'm the same kid that grew up out there on the prairie. Mm-hmm. I don't wear my suit, obviously, when mm-hmm. I go into South Dakota. Mm-hmm. When I'm coming off the plane, I do, and I'm sure that freaks everyone uh-huh. out a little bit. But for mm-hmm. the most part, you know, mm-hmm. I still have the same friends.
What's the website address for Lunar Line?
www.lunarline.com.
Excellent. We've been speaking with Waylon Crush, co-founder and CEO of Lunar Line, as well as we've had the opportunity of speaking with Song Yi, CFO of Standard Solar, Jim Gibbons, CEO of Goodwill Industries International, then the young managing partner of McLean Capital, and again, most recently, Waylon Crush, co-founder and CEO of Lunar Line. I'd like to thank my co-host, Dan Atheist, Empower Consulting, and Colin Callahan, Callahan & Associates, for giving me hand structuring the questions. Hope you're providing our listening audience an educational and entertaining show. I'd like to thank our listening audience for listening. Otherwise, we wouldn't have a radio show. Don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com, to learn more about our executive leaders. Thank you for joining us today, and have a nice day. Bye-bye.